This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today, we're talking about workshare programs, government programs that help businesses avoid layoffs, often argued as particularly helpful during recessions and economically difficult times like the one we're in right now. Indiana doesn't have a workshare program, and some are criticizing state administrators for showing disinterest in a chance for the federal government to help. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail. Call us at 866-476-3881. Just give us your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we will do our best to get it into the conversation today. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Joining me now are four guests to talk about workshare programs. Susan Hausman is Vice President and Director of Research at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
And welcome to Jessica Frazier, Director of the Indiana Institute for Working Families. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Also welcoming Michael Hicks, Director of the Center for Business and Economic Research and Associate Professor of Economics at Ball State University. Hi, Michael Hicks.
Good to be with you.
Kevin Briniger is also with us. He's president and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Thanks, Kevin.
Good afternoon. Appreciate being with you.
Susan, we'll start with you. Can you explain what workshare programs are? What's the idea behind them?
Well, the idea, as you mentioned in your introduction to this program, is basically to use workshare or to reduce workers' hours instead of laying workers off when a business is experiencing a temporary reduction in demand or business activity. So, for example, suppose that a business needs to has enough business to keep half of its employees busy full time. It could lay off half of its employees, or instead it could reduce hours by 50% and keep everybody employed. By using a formal workshare program that is part of currently 26 states' unemployment insurance programs, their unemployment insurance systems, workers gain access to unemployment insurance benefits. So those workers would receive half of their weekly regular unemployment benefit. And as many of your listeners probably know, currently the federal government is stepping in and supplementing those benefits by $600 per week through the end of July. It turns out that people on workshare also get that flat $600. And currently, under legislation that was passed and signed by President Trump at the end of March, the federal government is covering all workshare benefits. So employers won't face higher taxes in the future if they use workshare now, unlike if they use regular layoffs.
So this has the potential to, if we're talking about half of the pay and the other half being supplemented by unemployment insurance with the new extra $600, this has the potential for some workers at some income levels to make just as much as they were before?
That's correct. That's correct. Currently, and I should emphasize that this is a temporary supplement, but it's a generous one, $600 per week, that they get irrespective of the reduction in their hours. And so their generous benefits, it's certainly attractive for workers. And also, as mentioned, currently the federal government is covering all of these costs for states. So it doesn't drain unemployment and state unemployment insurance trust funds that ultimately would need to be replenished through higher employer taxes.
Now, do the benefits vary from state to state in any way? And also, what does temporary mean? How long can workshare be implemented?
So workshare can usually, we have an unemployment insurance system in the United States that's a federal-state partnership. And so the federal government provides overarching guidelines for each state's unemployment insurance system. But then there is variation across states in how long individuals can receive unemployment insurance benefits and the like. But typically, a workshare program could be utilized as long as a regular unemployment benefits could an individual could receive regular unemployment benefits. So, for example, suppose your state offers regular unemployment benefits for 26 weeks, they could receive that. If it has extended it 39 weeks, they would be eligible to receive benefits for that amount of time as well.
How many states have workshare programs?
Currently, 26 states have programs that are operating. The state of Virginia just passed new legislation. That's the 27th state. That will go into effect starting January 1st. The under this CARES Act that I mentioned earlier, that was passed at the end of March and signed into law by the president, states that don't, like Indiana, that don't have programs can implement an emergency program through the state. And in those cases, the federal government will at least pick up half of the benefits costs.
And I guess how do they tend to work in practice in other states? I guess how often have they had to be implemented? I'm assuming they've been implemented a little bit through the pandemic.
Right. Although it's surprising, given how given the nature of the benefits and some financial advantages potentially for both employers and for workers, their use has been relatively low. Currently, the new numbers on unemployment insurance claims and receipts came out today from the Department of Labor. And out of the 27 million people receiving benefits at the end of the week of May 2nd, the most recently available data, only about 143,000 were on workshare programs across the country. So it's quite low still. I think we will probably see more taking it up. The whole application process is a bit more involved. Employers aren't, in most states, even with programs, often don't know about it. They're not accustomed to using it. So I think we'll see a bit of a lag, like you've seen with regular unemployment claims. The states don't have enough people. I know this is true in my state, Michigan. They don't have enough people to handle all the flood of inquiries they're getting right now about workshare plans. So in the last week or so, many new people have been trained to get up to speed to help employers set up these plans.
Michael Hicks, can you talk about the work you've done looking at workshare programs? What have you found?
Well, when Indiana last looked seriously at this in 2017, we simply tried to review the literature on workshare. And I think the first point, Susan has explained this, I think, very well, is that the workshare program that the United States has that's implemented at the state level is really a short-term unemployment to allow businesses to, instead of, they have a 20% reduced demand to reduce employment. Instead of perhaps laying off 20% of workers, they could lay everybody off by 20%, and then workers would see a much smaller drop in their incomes until demand returned, and this provided several important benefits. The linkage between employers and employees was sustained over the downturn. Workers were able to maintain health insurance and other benefits with their employer, and so that it provided, especially for manufacturing firms, a very solid mechanism to deploy during a downturn when you expected a recovery in the future. And our work found that the states that had implemented similar programs since the 1970s had lower volatility in wages and unemployment, but it could be that those states had other labor market policies implemented at the same time, and that it was mostly attenuated to manufacturing. So factories use this, not retail, not other industries. One of the points that Susan made is that the very low usage rates here are probably in part due to the different nature of this downturn, which has been concentrated in those sectors that had not used work share in the past, even in the states where it was eligible. So we saw retail, restaurants and the like cut way back on employment and hours, and so maybe they're not as familiar with it. The other thing that I think is worth noting is that in our research, what we found was there's a European program that translates into short work or work share, which was used for different purposes, really to boost overall employment. So maybe you might take three 40-hour jobs, cut them each by 10 hours, and create a fourth 30-hour job. And that program in Europe has had sort of mixed effectiveness, but has confused a lot of policymakers in the United States who view this work share program in our unemployment insurance as a European model of boosting employment. And I think makes explaining this very much more difficult to policymakers, because what we're really talking about is introducing more, not less, labor market flexibility through work share. And so what we tried to do in the study that we did with Kevin Brinker's group, the Indiana Chamber, was to just lay out the case for a labor market program that was paid for by member businesses that are enrolled in the unemployment insurance system. At least this is the pre-CARES Act work share, that would allow businesses another tool to maintain employment during a downturn and then recover more quickly without having to retrain workers or go through the process of looking for new employees to replace those they laid off who may have drifted away to different job opportunities. And so I think that Susan laid out what this is. It's a simple and straightforward program, I think, in terms of concept that's available. The CARES Act plussed it up a great deal, and I'm just really surprised that Indiana has been recalcitrant on a program that would benefit a lot of employers, even outside manufacturing, which has been where it's mostly been focused upon in previous years.
Today we're talking about work share programs, government programs that help businesses avoid layoffs. And we are talking with a panel of guests that includes Susan Hausman, Vice President and Director of Research at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research, Jessica Frazier, Director of the Indiana Institute of Working Families, Michael Hicks, who you just heard, is Director of the Center for Business and Economic Research and Associate Professor of Economics at Ball State University, and Kevin Brinegar is with us. He's the President and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. We will be back with all of these guests again in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about work share programs and a push for Indiana to consider implementing them to help mitigate consequences of the pandemic. As always, we would love your questions and comments on the topic. We are live today. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a voicemail including your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. When we left off, we were talking with Michael Hicks, Director of the Center for Business and Economic Research and Associate Professor of Economics at Ball State University. And Michael, when we look at these programs around the country, does their effectiveness change much from state to state? Are there certain factors that seem to make them more likely to work?
You know, I'm not sure I can answer that question. As Susan alluded to, each state manages their unemployment insurance a little bit differently. I think regarding the duration of the eligibility rules vary a little bit. And then the way we pay for them varies from state to state. Some operate on a pretty actuarial basis for businesses who are going to pay based upon their industry and firm-specific experience with joblessness. And others have more intervention by the General Assembly in limiting rates and responding to variation in taxes. But the major, I think, difference in the use of work share is likely to be just the industrial structure. So a state like Indiana, which is, depending on the year, number one or number two in manufacturing employment and share of GDP, would be a state that would probably use work share to a much greater degree. Employers in work share, employers in manufacturing firms are, you know, face more business cycle changes in demand and need more flexibility in maintaining their workforce. So I think that's going to be the big difference in how they are affected in a state is the manufacturing share of employment.
Jessica Frazier is director of the Indiana Institute for Working Families. And Jessica, your group posted a blog a few weeks ago with the headline, "The Time for Work Sharing in Indiana is Long Overdue." Can you give us your pitch for why Indiana should do this?
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity to be on today to talk about this. You know, the Institute has been supporting, researching, working with the chamber and other advocates on a work sharing program since 2011. And at the time, we got interested in this program because we saw a lot of workers losing good, family-sustaining manufacturing jobs, and we had real concern that the jobs that they were going to get coming out of the Great Recession and going into the recovery were not going to be as family-sustaining as the ones that they had lost. And so we just saw work sharing as an opportunity for employers to be able to hold on to that valuable skilled workforce and maybe be able to bounce back from an economic downturn without completely going under or having to drastically reduce their workforce. We wanted people to hold on to good jobs. So that was what originally sparked our interest in the work. And since then, you know, even through the recovery, and since then, we have said, let's fix the roof while the sun is shining. We know that we're not going to have economic growth forever. There will always be another downturn coming down the pike. And let's give employers this opportunity to have this voluntary program that they can use to manage downturns in demand and hopefully be able to hold on to their skilled workforce.
And what impact would it have if Indiana had a work share program right now, Jessica, during the pandemic? Do you have a sense for how much of a difference it could make?
Well, I don't want to speak towards specific numbers. I think Susan could probably answer that question better than I could, but I can speak from just the human experience that workers could have to know that their employer values the contribution that they've made to that company, that they want to hold on to this skilled workforce that they have, that they're determined to bounce back from these troubled times, and that they're going to do everything that they can to help make sure that workers maintain as many hours as they can, that they maintain their health care and their retirement benefits, and that we can get through this stronger and, you know, sort of bounce back in a more rapid way.
And a quick note, we did reach out to the Indiana Department of Workforce Development to invite them on this show, and they said that they were unable to participate, but the department did recently give a statement to Indiana Public Broadcasting reporter Justin Hicks. It said, quote, "DWD is not pursuing a work share program at this time. The department is actively working to quickly implement and administer state and federal programs for Hoosier workers," end quote. Jessica, do we know what programs they're referring to here?
I think they're probably likely referring to the pandemic unemployment assistance, which was the version of UI that is for people who are not regularly eligible for our state program. So think about gig workers, think about people who are self-employed. So if you are not eligible for Indiana state UI, the federal government created a UI program for you. So I think, you know, that was one program they had to get up and running. And then, of course, there was the $600, bonus payments that Susan mentioned already. Those are the two that come to mind. There could be others that I'm just not aware of.
Kevin Briniger is president and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce, and he's also on our panel today. Kevin, what do you think of this concept? Should Indiana have it?
Absolutely. And I would agree that with Jessica, that we have been working together to try to get workfare legislation passed in Indiana during the strong economy so that it would be there in place when there was an economic downturn for whatever reason. And it is most unfortunate that the General Assembly did not enact workshare, because right now we're missing out on that 100% reimbursement from the federal government, including the additional $600, that money could be circulating in our state economy, helping to revive it, and again would give, as Michael said, employers another option for how to deal with the economic impact of this pandemic.
Why then do you think that it hasn't happened here? I guess that's the question I'm curious about.
Well, it's not been supported by the Department of Workforce Development, and there are a few key legislators who are swayed by those arguments, and that inaction is costing Indiana and Hoosiers what I believe would ultimately add up to tens of millions of dollars in federal payments through the CARES Act, the plussed up enhanced work share that Dr. Hicks talked about.
What are the arguments, though, that the DWD is putting forward against work share programs?
Well, it's varied over time, and that's been the frustrating aspect of this for us, is that the goalposts keep getting moved. Originally, it was concern about fraud. There's been concern expressed about that it would draw down the trust fund faster, which we think doesn't make sense because you're paying partial benefits instead of full benefits. And there's been no evidence and no research to show that that's happened in the other states that have work share. And then in recent years, it's been we don't have the money to establish the computer systems and the administration to set up a work share program to run parallel to the traditional unemployment. And what's particularly frustrating about the inaction now is that the CARES Act provides $100 million federal appropriation to help the non-work share states pay for the computer systems and the administration and the staffing to establish a work share program. And DWD has done that. They've done the work for the independent contractors who are not typically part of the work share or the unemployment system, rather, and they were able to do that in about 5 weeks. And so we certainly think that's far more complicated than establishing a work share system within their organization.
Kevin, is this a partisan issue in the General Assembly? Does support or opposition tend to come from a certain side of the aisle?
No, not at all. It has bipartisan support. There have been both Republicans and Democrats who have authored the bill and have co-authored the bill. And in fact, this program is also supported by organized labor, which is unusual in and of itself.
A lot of eyes have been on Governor Holcomb as of late for a lot of different reasons, workforce being one of them. Has he commented on the idea?
He's commented, and it is when in response to a question that he is open to looking at it down the road, that they feel like they've essentially got too much on their plate right now. And we find that encouraging, and we're going to continue to press the case and provide the information and the data that support it. And we certainly have been very supportive and appreciative of all of the work that the governor and his administration have done during this pandemic. And we think we support the five-phase program, the open lines of communication, the transparency. We just happen to disagree with his decision not to sign the agreement with the U.S. Department of Labor and take advantage of the plussed-up work share benefits from the federal government that Mike mentioned.
Susan Hausman is Vice President and Director of Research at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. We're going to go back to you, Susan. Earlier, Jessica said, fix the roof while the sun is shining. But you have a couple examples of other states that have implemented work share programs in bad times. It seems like the kind of thing that lawmakers might not appreciate is the usefulness of until a dire situation comes up. It's kind of like the one we're in right now. Have other states tended to adopt these programs during bad circumstances?
Well, there's actually a little bit of a history to this because it seems like the situation that we're in right now is deja vu all over again. Back in what we called the Great Recession, which doesn't seem so great anymore, 2008, 2009, There was concern that only 17 states at the time had workshare programs and that they weren't sufficiently used to mitigate unemployment during that time period. So in 2012, Congress passed legislation that once again, that previously had provided strong incentives for states to that didn't have it to implement these plans. They had, again, $100 million were allocated to states to finance the administration, the setting up of this, and the promotion of the programs. And nine states did do that. And the idea was to get those programs in place in time for the next recession. So now we have 26 states with operational programs, not 17. But it, you know, that could be, I don't want to speculate too much, but that could be a problem right now with Indiana and other states that are just feeling overwhelmed by the volume of unemployment insurance claims and feel that they don't have the bandwidth to set up another program. But as Jessica pointed out, they've done so for other programs. To the degree that this crisis will last for some period of time, it makes sense to take advantage of it and give employers more options. One quick point that I'd like to add in here is that we normally think of workshare as being used to prevent layoffs to begin with. So there's a downturn. Employers, instead of laying off workers, put them on short time. In this case, it was such an unusual recession. Things unfolded so quickly. We went from record low unemployment rates to record high unemployment rates in a matter of weeks. The firms didn't have time. So at the beginning of the month in May, the U.S. Department of Labor issued guidance that said that employers could also use workshare to bring furloughed workers back on. So, you know, say you've laid off, you had 100 workers, you have work for half of them now, as states are slowly opening up safely, you could bring back half of them, or you could bring back all of them and put them on workshare. I say this because I think there is a strong use for workshare as the economy recovers, and that, you know, makes it quite beneficial for all states to try to participate, to reemploy people, to move this extraordinary unemployment rate that we're currently facing down, reconnect workers to their jobs, to their benefits and the like.
Matt, I might also add that Kentucky has become the 27th state. They were still in session. Their legislature was still in session when the CARES Act passed, and they very quickly, in about a week's time, passed a workshare statute so that they could participate in the 100% reimbursement from the federal government provided by the CARES Act.
So this is something that can be implemented then during these bad times right now, and indeed it has. Susan, have there been any negative consequences that you've seen looking at states that have actually done this?
Not that I've seen. I directed a study that came out in 2017 that looked at the overall use of workshare in a couple of states and tried to understand what were some of the impediments to greater use. One of the big impediments was just very simple that many employers simply didn't know about it. We go into recession about every 10 years and it was never promoted. So overall understanding of it is quite low. But it's also important, I think that Michael and Jessica alluded to this fact, but it's just a tool for employers. They're never compelled to use this. So employers, it just becomes something that they can also use to help adjust if it makes sense for them. During this study, which was conducted in Iowa and Oregon, two states with workshare plans, we interviewed all the employers, or most of the employers that had used it in the prior 3 years, and they were overwhelmingly satisfied with the program. So it seems to have worked quite well for those employers that use it. Michael mentioned a lot of manufacturers use it. That's true. also, but small businesses have used it too, particularly those in professional business services. And there's no reason it couldn't be used in a broader swath of services sectors.
Got just a little more than a minute left, but Susan, I guess see a fiscal argument against workshare programs among people who don't know as much about them, like myself. And so I'll pose that to you. Could this cost a state more on unemployment than they would otherwise if they didn't have the program?
Oh, well, definitely not now, because the federal government is paying 100% of the benefits. In fact, a big argument right now for it from a state perspective and also from the employer's perspective is that you're not pulling out the benefits from the state unemployment insurance trust fund. We know that we're, you know, because of the fact that we're seeing unprecedented levels of unemployment in all the states. People are claiming at unprecedented levels unemployment insurance. State trust funds are quickly draining. When they do, which for most, some states are already needing to borrow money from the federal government, others will need to do so most likely in the next few months. They're going to go into debt, and that those trust funds will need to be replenished.
Well, today we're talking about workshare programs and a push for Indiana to consider implementing them to help mitigate consequences of the pandemic. We would love your questions and comments on the topic. We're live for one more segment. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser, back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on workshare programs, government programs that offer a temporary alternative to layoffs. We have a live panel of guests today, so we would love to get your questions and comments to them. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from to 866-476-3881. Again, 866-476-3881. Our guests today are Susan Hausman, Vice President and Director of Research at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research, Jessica Frazier, Director of the Indiana Institute for Working Families, Michael Hicks, Director of the Center for Business and Economic Research, and the Associate Professor of Economics at Ball State University, and Kevin Brenniger, President and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Kevin, what do businesses and industries think about this idea throughout the state?
They are very supportive. We have a large number of our members that are supportive of the workshare and want it adopted here in Indiana. And in particular, we have a number of companies who have who are headquartered here in Indiana, have operations in other states, including Oregon, who was mentioned earlier, who are using workshare effectively in those states and would like to be able to use it here in Indiana. In one case, we have a member who has a company in Oregon and said that utilizing workshare saved that company from going out of business during this pandemic. And I would also like to mention for your listeners, if they would like more information on workshare, they can go to our website, indianachamber.com/workshare, and there's a wealth of information there that they can use to learn more about workshare and educate themselves.
You recently said that 130 companies have asked why a workshare program isn't available in Indiana. Are there any patterns that you're seeing in which kinds of companies are asking, or is there interest in it across the board?
I would say there's interest in it across the board from this sample. And these are just companies that reached out to us and said that, you know, and responded and said they support workshare. And it ranges from our very largest employers and manufacturers to service providers and smaller companies and big and large all over the state of Indiana that would like to have this as an option to deal with the economic impacts of this pandemic.
Kevin, the Indiana Manufacturers Association has opposed the idea of a workshare program. Why is that?
You'd have to ask them that question. We have manufacturers as the largest segment of our membership, and our manufacturing members are strongly in support of workshare.
How much communication have you had with the state and state administrators about this?
We began communicating with both the folks at DWD and the governor's office from the moment the CARES Act passed and we saw the enhanced work share provisions and the funding that was in the CARES Act, and communicated regularly with our support, provided information, actually provided the legislative language from the CARES Act, have been, encouraging them for the past 6 weeks. And it was only last week that I received a phone call from one of the governor's staff saying that they've decided not to sign the agreement with the U.S. Department of Labor and take advantage of the provisions for enhanced work share that the CARES Act provided.
A little bit ago, you mentioned a business that said that a work share program saved their company. What effect does it have on businesses when they need to lay off a substantial chunk of their workforce in a situation like this, both long term and short term?
Well, as the panel's discussed, it allows them to keep the employee connected to the employer. It allows them to get recoup part of the reduction in their salary through unemployment benefits, rather than not have that 30 or 50% of their reduced salary replaced in any way. And it allows them to keep their health insurance and other employer-provided benefits, which doesn't happen in the case of a complete layoff. And in many instances, that ends up being a catastrophic event for the employee if they're in a period of unemployment and they have a big health issue, then they have no health insurance, and now you've put them in financial crisis.
Michael Hicks, do we know how many people have been laid off in Indiana since the pandemic hit?
Yeah, we're getting close to 300,000 continuing job losses in the state. That won't appear in the unemployment data, which will be released tomorrow, simply because it's from about 5 weeks ago. But, we're talking about a substantial number. And I think that if you extrapolate the national use of job or the work share program to Indiana, if we were using it at national rates, and then if you add in the $100 million that we could use to update our terribly antiquated technology that implements this, our UI program, the failure to adopt work share in Indiana is going to cost us somewhere between $150 million and $200 million over the next 6 months. So it's a very, very costly short-term and long-term mistake by the governor and the Department of Workforce Development.
But work share aside, aren't they already doing that? Haven't they already seen the problems in the UI program since the pandemic hit?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the point that Susan made that it's like drinking out of a fire hose. They were staffed in late February to handle, a few hundred to a few thousand unemployment claims per week. And, we're seeing 60, 70,000 nationally. We're in our seventh record week of job losses and initial jobless claims. And so just a, extraordinary technical difficulty in implementing the program. So it is, you can imagine, if you're sitting in an office that's, facing a tenfold increase in the challenge of implementing a program and raw numbers, it's very difficult to think outside the box, which is why Kevin's organization, labor groups, and business groups around the state 3 years ago tried to get work share adopted in Indiana so we'd be prepared for a downturn that we knew would come, but no one would have anticipated it this being this large.
But with that in mind, with the technical issues in mind, and again, setting aside a work share program, what do you make of the way the state has responded to this, especially in respect to how it's handled and affected the economy?
Right. I think the governor's done a fantastic job. I'm going to give him an A-, particularly when you compare it to a federal response, which is a gentleman's D- in response to COVID. Workforce development has been subject to a lot of criticism. I've watched most of their weekly briefs over the past several weeks, and you know, they are facing unprecedented flood of jobless claims, and I think they're handling it about as good as they can. Their problem is not their response. Their problem is their preparation. They weren't prepared for this, in part because of work share, in part because Indiana, like many other states, just has not updated the technology that would allow them to work through the claims. And so we're not the worst. I mean, I think New York was putting out a call for COBOL users, which is a computer language I learned in the early 1980s, which was not particularly useful at the time. And so I think that's part and parcel of the response, is how well you have prepared for the unthinkable in these positions.
Jessica,
Matt, if I could,
go right ahead.
I would echo Michael's comments. I mean, you have to, in fairness to DWD, they, you know, they went from a little over 2,000 claims a week in February to, in some cases, you know, 80, 100, over 100,000 in 1 week. And it's obviously difficult to ramp up for that. And, you know, I've been on regular calls with them, and they are scrambling. They've hired additional people. They did a contract with an outside vendor to help with phone calls. And, you know, they rapidly upgraded their systems. And I really believe they've done an admirable job and the best they can to handle this deluge of unemployment claims and inquiries and things of that nature. And so while we're not on the same page with respect to WorkShare, I do tip my hat to them on the efforts they've made and the information they've put out trying to deal with the onslaught of unemployment claims and dealing with requirements of the federal government to handle the $600 a week, to handle the independent contractors, et cetera.
Yeah, there was a lot about this that many of us weren't ready for. Today, we're talking about WorkShare programs, and we are live with a panel of guests to help us out on it, including Jessica Fraser, director of the Indiana Institute for Working Families. Jessica, what are you most worried about with the process of workers and businesses transitioning back once the state fully opens back up?
Sure. So in every recession, the folks that we worry about the most, low-income Hoosiers, Hoosiers that are earning less than 200% of federal poverty, they always seem to be the ones that recover last and have the hardest time trying to get back into the groove of things and work themselves towards family-sustaining incomes. And we certainly saw that with the Great Recession before. Indiana still had not fully recovered from the poverty rate that we had before the Great Recession, and median wages had not fully recovered since before the Great Recession. And so we worry about the very vulnerable Hoosiers. And, you know, this recession has been a recession of service sector jobs, retail sector jobs. These are folks that are making $9 to $11 an hour median with unemployment benefits. That's 47% of those wages. And, you know, the value that WorkShare could have for, you know, we always think about it as manufacturing, but the value that it could have for retail is this opportunity to give people not 47% of those wages, but all of those wages, or, you know, most of those wages during this time, especially with the extra $600 bonus that we have right now. So we see work sharing as an opportunity to maybe have a recession where very low-income Hoosiers are not the last to recover. They don't suffer as many catastrophic losses and damages as we've seen in the past. And those are the folks that I'm concerned about the most.
Jessica, there's a part near the end of the Institute for Working Families' recent blog post on this that says, quote, "For years, the Institute has asked policymakers to fix the roof while the sun is shining," something you said earlier, "and put a work share program in place while the economy was strong. Sadly, now it is not just raining, it's a torrential downpour," end quote. There's frustration behind this message, of course, but in that metaphor, there's also that implication that it could be a lot easier to convince lawmakers to act now that the problem is blatantly obvious and it's currently happening. Are you optimistic about this having that kind of an effect?
I am. I hope that, you know, some of the lawmakers that the chamber and I have worked with since 2011 are looking around right now. You know, every year we've had a bill, even if it didn't have a hearing. And so Senator Bassler has been authoring the bill in the last few years. And I am sure that he is thinking to himself, this is why I authored this bill. This is why I got on board with this policy, because of something like this. So I think that we're going to be hearing a lot more from lawmakers asking what they can do when the session opens up in January. Unfortunately, I feel like we could be putting in place the temporary program now and getting the kinks worked out so that come January, we would be ready to fully implement a permanent program.
Well, it could come with a fight. And Susan, have you seen state lawmakers resist creating a workshare program and then changing their mind for reasons that you can identify? I mean, what seems most persuasive to get support for it?
You know, I'm sure I think it was Michael at the beginning talked about some misperceptions about what the workshare program was and equating it to, you know, some programs in Europe that had gotten bad press. My understanding, when we looked at this back following the last recession, when state unemployment insurance programs were really struggling with deficits. Now, of course, they're that much worse in their trust funds. The number one reason seemed to be that they were just overwhelmed and didn't have the bandwidth to, implement a new program. So something that we've already talked about. These are extraordinary times, and I think that the case has been made by others on the program that, you know, perhaps it's time to step up to the plate and try to implement this now. I guess in just one final thought is that, arguably, from a macroeconomic perspective, the economy is not, we're seeing states reopen, everyone is, but arguably we won't be up to strength unless or until we have a vaccine or an effective treatment, and that's probably many, many months away. And I make that point simply because workshare can be used to bring furloughed workers back on. And so I think that there will be a role for some time for this program among states, and it's not too late for state legislatures and administrators to try it.
Susan, I guess what I'm looking for a little more clarification on is what kinds of groups and why typically oppose workshare. We heard about the Indiana Manufacturers Association. I've also heard some things about unions opposing workshare. What groups and why?
So employers, I would echo Kevin's comment that, we should ask the Indiana Manufacturers Association why they oppose it. I'm not sure why. It is a voluntary program by employers. Employers only use it if it's to their advantage. Unions opposed it in the past. They were concerned about employers cutting back on hours, using workshare as an excuse to cut back on hours and benefits. I believe with changes in the federal law in 2012, their concerns were largely addressed. So I don't see a lot of union resistance anymore, but again, it's possible. But I don't think that is so strong as it used to be.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests today. Susan Hausman is Vice President and Director of Research at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. Susan, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Jessica Frazier is director of the Indiana Institute for Working Families. Thanks to you, Jessica.
Thank you. This was a great conversation.
And Michael Hicks is director of the Center for Business and Economic Research and associate professor of economics at Ball State University. Thank you, Michael Hicks.
It was good to be with you.
Kevin Brinegar is president and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Thank you, Kevin, for your time today.
Thanks for the opportunity to be with you and your listeners.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. Tomorrow is our Friday pitch-in. We'll catch up on some of the biggest news headlines of the week. And you can find us in the meantime on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is All In.